Welcome, everyone. Welcome. We have a real treat this afternoon. This evening, whenever you're listening to Paradigm Shifters, we're bringing to you David Eisen with some of his wonderful music. He does all kinds of music, some that you can hear right now, and he does some that help you resonate healing. And we're going to talk more about consciousness, creating your reality, and creative observation. Is that the right word, David?
And creative consciousness.
Creative consciousness. Welcome to the show, David.
Thanks.
You've been here several times before.
Yes, I am no longer a virgin.
And back by public request, by special request, here you come again.
One more time.
Yeah, we've talked a bit about the different levels of consciousness and how you work with creative consciousness. And we got into talking in preparation for this with creative observation.
Okay.
Do you want to tell people a little bit about what all that means? Because you talked about the manufactured self, the bifurcated self, the essential self.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I asked you something as cheeky as this, is do we really create our reality? Can we change the condition in Syria?
Mm-hmm.
And you gave me a very, very, almost poetic, but a very rich answer, something that we can all use.
Thank you, Veronica. So I'd like to, first of all, just say hi to everybody out there in Radio Land. We always appreciate seeing you and hearing you and being with all of you as we are here out at the edge of the world with Veronica. And of course, we want to thank our fantastic engineer, Robert. So thank you, Robert.
And does this mean, if we're at the edge of the world, is it still a flat earth society?
This is no longer the flat earth society. We have awoken to the fact that the earth does revolve around the sun.
Oh.
And that there are not gigantic sea monsters who eat you as you swim.
Oh, this is a good thing. We like that.
Okay. So in answer, let's just sort of get started. In answer to your...
It's a big question.
...query, yes, this is a, you know, perhaps one of the biggest.
But it's a really demanding question these days, especially those of us who are on the path of creating our reality, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's a lot of things, written material, ancient spiritual practices, about this question, and it's a very, very complicated question because it's complex because there are so many aspects to the question, and you could talk about the power of choice, you could talk about personal responsibility, you could talk about the ability to choose, you could talk about what it meant to be alive on the earth, what it meant to be incarnate in the body, what the process of incarnation was, and how the process of incarnation is in fact a process, and how just by virtue of being incarnate, being in this body at this time and space, actually creates the opportunity for you to learn how you choose what you choose. See, that's just the tip of the iceberg of all the questions or processes that come forward.
And as you speak of these like different components, do we share dharma? Are we all here now because we share the dharma of experiencing that learning?
Well, I don't even know what that means, share dharma. Yet, I mean, I obviously know what it means, but my response to that would be to say that all life is alive, and all human life is human life, and every human being, doesn't matter if they're pink, black, white, purple, green, male, female, and everything in between, they all are human beings, and every human being shares the same type of body and the same type of consciousness and mind, and every human being is incarnate, and every human being is born with the capacity to choose. And every human being is incarnate. You know, it's born incarnate into this fabric, into this container of reality. And so we all share many, many things by virtue of that. but on a Dharma scale, we all share the journey of incarnation. And the journey of incarnation is the journey to accepting and loving myself, loving myself incarnate in this body right here, right now. And that journey to the self is the journey that comes with incarnation. And if you look down the lines of time, down through the beginning, of all the ancient teachings and all the modern teachings and all religions and the isms and the schisms, as Bob Marley says, are all about the journey of incarnation. And then we go deeper into that journey. So the journey into incarnation and into the acceptance of incarnation and into then the joy of incarnation is the journey from the world of polarity and duality, which we call in creative consciousness, the practice that I teach and bring forward, we call the world of polarity and duality, we call it bifurcation, the world of bifurcation. So if you look down the lines of time, that's what you see, is every single ideology, every single religious system, every single philosophical system, without exception, are all dealing with the nature of the presence of duality. And then every one of them has their own answer to the presence of duality. Buddhists have a Buddhist way of looking at it. Hindus have Hindus ways of looking at it. Christians have Christians way of looking at it. Muslims have Muslims way of looking at it. Native Americans have Native American ways of looking at it. And everybody's dealing with needing to come to terms with the shape of dualism or the bifurcation. So
you mean no matter which religious pursuit they take or path they take?
They're all dealing with the fact that duality is a fact. They all deal with it. Mm-hmm. And that is a really interesting thing to come to know and to come to understand. So we say, and I'm going now to your question from my perspective, from creative consciousness perspective.
Okay.
Creative consciousness teaches us that bifurcation is inherent in consciousness, that consciousness is inherently bifurcated. The second thing that creative consciousness...
Do you mean by like good and evil or light and dark?
Those are manifestations of the presence of duality. Those are proof, if you will, of the existence of bifurcation, up, down, light, dark, something, nothing.
Like the mitosis of thought.
Well, it's the bicameral mind in one older way of speaking about this. So we've taken that and observed and looked at all of this, and we see, yeah, everything, everybody's dealing with this. Mm-hmm. And so the first law is that consciousness is inherently bifurcated. And the second law is the presence of bifurcation creates the drive to unification.
Okay.
And that is a direct answer to the sharing of the Dharma, to your term. Everyone shares, every consciousness shares the journey into unity, into unification. And that is what we mean by bifurcation. The presence of bifurcation creates the drive to unification. That becomes purpose. So when you talk about sharing Dharma and things like this, I would prefer to frame that in without any kind of ideological or theosophical terminology. And, you know, I'm a deep, deep Vipassana practitioner and have been for 40 years. But I still, these days, I want to step outside of theological or ideological references. So
I don't think I was thinking of theological or ideological.
Just the word dharma is a theological term.
Well, I suppose I was being glib, but what I was really getting to was, isn't the whole collective, isn't it the time that we all share a certain kind of impetus or a certain drive? Is that so? That's a feeling I get, but I don't know if that's so.
Well, I think, again, that you know, these are giant, broad statements, mm-hmm. and we want to, in a sense, try to bring those broad statements down into the ground, so to speak, to mm-hmm. ground those statements. And at the same time, yes, there are universal laws, mm-hmm. and those are very big and broad things. Those are universal things. Mm-hmm. So one of the universal laws is the commonality of purpose. And many, 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 many practices are all about finding your life's purpose. That's a huge business, you know. It's really quite simple at this level. It's that the purpose is to learn a practice that moves you from the two into the one, that moves you from bifurcation into unification. So that journey is the journey of incarnation. You know, and we all share the journey of incarnation. Nobody gets out of this alive, as Hank Williams would say. And in the sharing of the journey of incarnation, what we're sharing are many things, and the primary thing that we're sharing is the journey from the two into the one. The bifurcation creates the drive to unification.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you see, that's that way of saying it. You know, there's no theological baggage around it. You know, there's no religion baggage. There's no Buddhist, there's no Christian, there's no Muslim, there's no nothing. It's just a universal law that we all share. And I personally work very hard at bringing those universal laws, which mm-hmm. are universal, and they're non-sectarian, you know, they're non-sectarian. And you can be a Buddhist, or you can be a Christian, or a Muslim, or a Hindu, or a Celtic pagan, and still share the journey of incarnation, and still share the need to move from duality into unification.
Mm.
All right?
Yes.
So the next piece of that, of the journey of incarnation, is to get happy about being incarnate, to get happy about being alive in this body right here and right now. And that happiness will lead you to the happiness of the ability to choose. I think that, and creative consciousness teaches us that that the greatest human fear is the fear of responsibility that comes with the ability to choose.
Hmm.
It's not the fear of death. It's not the fear of public speaking. You know, it's not the fear of flying or, you know, whatever. It really, we're all afraid of the responsibility that comes with the ability to choose, because the acceptance of that responsibility would say, you have to say to yourself, I am responsible for every choice that I make. Every choice that I make creates an action. Every action creates a result, and I'm responsible for mm-hmm. that. And no one can bear that. You know, that is Sisyphus pushing the rock up. That's Atlas with the world on the shoulders. You know, these are very ancient symbols and myths and metaphors that describe this situation. And so I would hope, and I know that right now, right here and right now, that is the sharing of the Dharma, to use this term, that all of us are being called, to use a term, to come to celebrate the joy of incarnation and to celebrate the beauty of the power of choice, and to celebrate the flip where the created becomes the creator. And to celebrate that creative power with full enlightened choice, in full consciousness that is completely aware of how we choose what we choose.
So that's a lot to think about right now, to make a glib, quick statement, as you know. So let's move into choosing using creative observation. I'm very interested in that, because at that point we were talking about creating our reality. Mm-hmm. And what I understand is you saying there are many, many, many levels of actually
accomplishing that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Manifesting.
So this is, again, So the practice of creative observation is a practice within the larger practice of creative consciousness.
Right.
And one of the deepest practices in creative consciousness, which is ancient and ancient and ancient, is the idea of training the mind to learn to observe the reality as it is, as opposed to continuing to see reality according to my desire.
Or my projections?
Well, the projection is my desire. I'm projecting my desire. The projection is born of my desire. And so that is the tendency of mind, is to want. The tendency of mind is to crave, you know. Constant craving has always been, and so it is written. And our job is to learn to transform the habit pattern of the mind out of craving and out of the misery that is generated by craving. And the first place that, and the deepest, so that's the first and the deepest place that we go, is to understand that it is our tendency, and consciousness's tendency, and the basic framework of consciousness is to want the reality itself to be what I want it to be,
right,
rather than to see the reality for what it is. So we are here at the very beginning to learn to, what we say, observe the reality as it is. This is not anything special to creative consciousness. It's not new. It is ancient. Observing the reality as it is the backbone of the deepest meditation and transformational practices on the planet. So we start with that. Mm-hmm. That here are these techniques that you learn that train you to observe the reality as it is. A large part of the practice behind those practices is the idea that if you, here's a lovely phrase for everybody out in radio land. You might even want to write this down. It's just five words. Observe, recognize, validate, and receive. And how beautiful is that? This is the entire path in one small land. Observe, validate, recognize, and receive. So, what does this mean? It means that we learn to observe whatever it is we're looking at. Like, I am dealing with my partner. And so I'm in an argument with my partner. And the argument is about whatever it may be. All I need to do to resolve this at the fundamental level is to simply step back and observe my reaction to this situation. I can step back and see, by doing that, I can see where this person is coming from. I stop seeing them from my lens of desire about, I want them to be like this, or I want them to do this. So by stepping back in this way, I can see the person for who they are. Observe. And then I recognize them. I give them recognition, if you take my meaning. Mm-hmm. I give them recognition. They feel the recognition. It's a feeling. It's a vibration. It's an exchange. And this is palpably different than the feeling that comes when I'm trying to change the reality as it is, and when I'm pushing them back into a corner. Because I'm pushing them back into a corner by not seeing them for who they are. So observing, then I recognize them for who they are. They feel that. And then in this recognition, they feel validated. They feel seen. I feel validated. I feel seen. They feel validated. They feel seen. And that vibration goes into a circular motion, and that is the nature of the exchange.
So the same two people could have a non-validating, warlike kind of...
Exactly. Thing.
Tell me this, when you talked about the manufactured self, do you think a lot of our observation gets blunted or stunted because of the self we keep creating, the identity? It's an identity, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. So in creative consciousness, we have a trinity of that make up, that comprise an individual's identity. One of them is what we call the bifurcated self, which is the nature of the identity that is operating according to the shape of duality, according to the shape of bifurcation. Then we have, in opposition to that, if you will, the essential self, which is the aspect of consciousness that is in full possession of who it is. And then we have the manufactured self, which is the aspect of consciousness that has come into being in response to the vicissitudes of daily life. And so those are the three aspects, the trinity of consciousness, of identity. So what I have learned, and this goes to your question, and I just find this to be amazing and so important, and it's taken me a lifetime to come to this understanding.
But you're young yet.
Well, I'm 63. You know, and I thank you, but I am old. So what I've learned is this. When we talk about learning how we choose what we choose, and we talk about embracing the power of choice and the beauty of incarnation, mm-hmm, and the power of choice, what I come to understand is that the choosing is creating the future. This is a really different way of seeing the nature of choice. When you make a choice, you're creating the future. Because it didn't exist. The thing that you chose was an option. It was an opportunity. The choice was present in the present moment, and then you made the choice. And when you made the choice, the future was created. Okay? So in this very big way, incarnate human beings are always predicting the future, mm-hmm. and they're always creating the future. And it's all because of incarnation, which includes the bifurcation, which includes the drive to unification, which includes the ability to choose, which therefore includes the need to know how you choose what you choose and why you choose it. All of that is language that's describing how you create the future. And when I finally got this, you know, I love that. I think that is a really cool thing, mm-hmm. is that people, we really are creators.
Right.
We really, and creators create the future. That's what a creator is. Amazing. So of course I'm going to be afraid of that. And of course I'm going to make these massive creation myths, and every single one of them is about a creator God. Every creation myth is about a creator God. Every one of them. And every one of them starts talking about how we are created in the image of that thing, or that thing created us, and all this business. You could look at that and just go, wow, you know, yeah. Consciousness is so old, and it's so deeply ingrained, this fear of creating, of being a creator, is so deeply ingrained that we have created entire structures that allow us to abdicate that ability to someone outside of myself. And that's that. Friends and neighbor, you know, that's the way it is. So here we are in 2014, and I really know that it's time for us to accept the responsibility of being a creator and learn the practice, if you will, of creative consciousness, so that we can all understand how we choose what we choose. So, looking through this lens, I found this future thing, that we're creating the future. That's awesome. Then I understood this, that when you are operating out of the manufactured self-identity structure.
Right, that's what I'm curious about.
So when that aspect of consciousness is as we say in the therapy business, when that aspect of consciousness is up front, you know, has taken over the body. When you're operating out of the perspective of the manufactured self, or operating out of the perspective of the bifurcated self, what's happening is that you, as a human being, are living within the container of reality itself. You are part of that reality, and that reality is part of you. It's very important, however, to understand that you are within the container. And you could talk about as above, so below, and there's all kinds of things about this. But the fact is that I am inside of the container of reality. And inside the container of reality is a thing we call the present moment.
Ta-da.
Ta-da. Oh, no. Okay, the present moment. In the present moment, is pure potential. It is all potential. It is all opportunity. And that's incredible when you think about that. Back, right. You know, everybody's like, well, I'll be here now, the present moment, and now here we go. Creative consciousness will teach you that, lo and behold, the present moment is simply pure potential. It's also potential becoming actual. This is really important. This is the place where the potential is the future. And becoming actual is the action that creates, that brings forward the present moment, if you take my meaning. So, wait a minute.
It's like if you're in the now, the power of the now, and we've got this potential, we have the ability to perceive or to observe ourselves. To see which level of self or potential driving self there is, right?
Well, yes, but that's not the way I'm verbalizing it, okay? So I'm just going to finish this one thing, which is the present moment is pure potential. The present moment is three things, and these three things are coexisting simultaneously. This is really important to understand, is that the simultaneity of these three states.
Okay.
So the first state is the present moment is pure potential. The second state is the present moment is potential becoming actual. And the third state is the actual. So all of those three things comprise the now. So the now is pure potential becoming actual and is actual. So right there, you see this setup, this equation, this format that shows you that that the future is contained in the present moment, which is what everybody, all the physicists will talk about, it being in the present moment.
Right.
And the future being in the present moment, and the past being in the present moment, and the now being in the present moment. And this equation shows you all of that in this action place. So what we understand then is that in the bifurcated nature and in the manufactured self, if you are untrained, and if you are untrained and uninitiated into the work and into the path, which is the work will bring you into the essential self. Okay. So in the bifurcated nature and the manufactured self, these two aspects of identity have a particular perspective. And we then understand that this perspective defines the way that you see the reality as it is. And what I've recently learned is, and this is really amazing, is that my creative ability and my creative process, or a person's creative ability, a person's creative process, is determined by this perspective. In other words, the way that I see, the lens that I perceive reality through, creates the way that I see reality.
Yes. That's something
Pretty simple.
Yes.
Now, the next part, which is the next layer, which is the next cool part, is that the way that I see reality through the lens that I see it from within, shows me or puts me in a set of possible futures.
Okay.
A possible outcomes, I would say. I like to have futures or outcomes.
Okay.
You know? And so all of a sudden, we see this amazing law, which is that my perception, which is defined by my identity of the manufactured self or the bifurcated self or the essential self, but if I am operating out of the manufactured self's identity operating system or the bifurcated self's operating system, I am perceiving the reality through the perceptual lens that is created by those two identity structures, either one of them. When I am seeing the reality through those perceptual lenses, I am projecting or putting myself or finding myself within a set of possible futures. And those futures are created by virtue of the way I see myself, and then by the way that I position myself inside the container of the reality. So the next part is, when I change that, and change that is very specific in creative consciousness, the change is moving from the bifurcation into the unification. Remember, this is the law. The law is consciousness is inherently bifurcated. The presence of bifurcation creates the drive to unification. All right? So if as long as I am, and the drive to unification is the drive into the essential self. So what I can do is change that. I can do the work of moving the two into one. I can do the work of moving into the unified self. I can do the work of coming into unification with the essential self.
And so you're saying unification is actually coming to the essential self.
That's correct. And I'm also saying that the essential self is a unified entity.
What is the essential self?
You could say that you would be very good to say that the essential self is the aspect of consciousness that does not seek or need external validation.
Okay.
You'd be very well served by starting off with that premise. That and this is getting back to our thing now. So the manufactured self and the bifurcated self are operating almost completely out of the need for validation. And they seek the validation. The
manufacturers, like getting likes on Facebook?
It's like getting likes on Facebook. It's like getting you to love me.
Yeah.
It's like getting my mother to love me. It is consciousness within the bifurcated state is seeking validation. And it's seeking validation externally. Mm-hmm. And this is why every single practice says, to thine own self be true. Every single practice says this. And there it is. So the essential self is the aspect of consciousness that does not need external validation, because it itself is validating itself. Mm. It is internally validated. So you would say, I am that I am. You would say, it is what it is. Things like this. And all of these, so the internal validation is a unified reality. And that is a deeper thing, definition of the essential self. The essential self is a completely unified aspect of identity, of consciousness. The bifurcated self is a split. It's not unified. It's dual. It's bifurcated. The manufactured self is split into many aspects. Mm-hmm. And then the relationship between the manufactured self and the bifurcated self to the essential self is a dualistic perspective. And so the movement that we're talking about is the movement from the two into one, and the two are the manufactured self and the bifurcated self, and the one is the essential self. Hmm. And so what you ultimately can see is the journey from the two into one is the journey from the need for external validation determining your intent. You see? The need for validation formulates all of my choices. It formulates all of my actions. I need validation. I need recognition. And because of this deep-seated need, all of my choices are formulated by the intention to get that validation. When you are operating from within that framework, your position in the present moment filled with possible futures is filled and defined by your need for validation from the external. And so all of the possible futures that you have within yourself are born of that need. Mm. And by practicing...
So we're in kind of a jail, in a sense.
You are trapped in within the need for validation. Right. It is the ultimate trap. I have discovered that the need for validation is the shadow side of consciousness, and that the essential self is the light. And it's a wonderful vision, that vision. And it's true. That's why it's wonderful, because it's true. The manufactured self and the bifurcated self, because they are born of the circumstances that produces the need for validation. Mm. See, the manufactured self is a story. It's just a made-up thing. And so because it's made up, it constantly seeks validation. I mean, that makes total sense, right? Mm, I mean, the thing is a story. And so it needs validation, it needs constant, and it's constant. And so because that is a vibrational rate. The consciousness is vibrating at a particular rate of vibration, right? And this is where that vibration is. It is determined by the level of the need for validation. And the need for recognition, and the need for beloved, and the need to be accepted, and all of this is happening from external. Mm-hmm. You're seeking it from the external. And when you are walking through the world with that as your operating system, that's the vibration that you're carrying. That's the vibration that you're holding. And that's the vibration that you're projecting. Mm.
And that's a kind of belonging vibration in communities or cities or countries or
absolutely
nationalities.
And I would say that vibration creates boundaries and borders and immigrants and war and possessiveness and territories and all of the inherent evil that we are all sitting inside of right now, and that's why we're sharing this journey right now. Because consciousness has the opportunity, and it always has this opportunity. Neanderthals had this opportunity. Mm-hmm. You know, they just didn't live in the moment that we live in right now. And so we all right now share this incredible opportunity born of an intense need not to wipe ourselves out, and not to wipe the planet out, and not to wipe everything out.
That's a unifying fear.
That is a very strong motivator. Yeah. You know, and it's real. We're not making that up. And so what's missing, that is the reality as it is. This is the reality that we are part of right now, that we observe. What's missing is the awareness of creative consciousness, if you will. It is the awareness of how you choose what you choose. It is the beauty and the joy that comes from embracing the journey that incarnation places us on. And so rather than having that journey be a negative, bad thing, or a thing that creates all of this fear and territorial possessiveness and all of the things that go along with the need for validation.
Validated by our territory very often.
But you can see, right there, you can see that the need for validation is across the board.
Right.
You know, it creates the territory, the need for territory. It creates then the need to protect the territory. Mm-hmm. It creates the need for an economic reality that is different from this, from this, from this, from this. And all of it comes down to the need for validation. So what we see here in the glorious place of the essential self is that we all have the opportunity to choose to move from the two into the one. And in that choice, when the one is present by practice, this is not some instantaneous cosmic wand that is waved over your head.
Oh, darn.
Yeah. And there's no pill or no LSD or no DMT or no Terrence McKenna or no Eckhart Tolle or no Oprah. There is no instantaneous thing. What there is deep, deep knowing. And the knowing comes from experience. And the experience...
I think it also comes from focus, doesn't it?
The experience is focus and practice. Mm-hmm. You don't get the focus unless you practice.
Right.
And that is what we're talking about, is the movement from the two into one through choosing to do so.
Mm-hmm.
And choosing to do so because you have made the choice based on the understanding that as long as you're operating out of the need for external validation, you are operating from within the perspective of the manufactured self or the bifurcated self.
Now, do they teach this in grade school?
They have never taught this in grade school, nor at the graduate level at Harvard.
You know, and when I knew that.
And when I was I was on the board of directors at the Center for Psychology and Social Change at Harvard from 92 to like 98, and they're dancing around all of this like crazy, but nobody is bringing it down to this level.
When you say dancing around, is it people deciding whether they can risk the lack of validation or the security or the pomposity or the...
It's analogous to the whole spiritual journey of every practice. It's that every spiritual practice and all spiritual journeys are, in fact, dancing around this thing. And they, as we said earlier, all of these practices have come into being basically in order to assuage the fear and the doubt and the guilt that comes from not taking responsibility for the ability to choose.
So, David, what makes someone suddenly turn around, or not suddenly maybe, but turn around and begin to examine these levels of selfness that can create into creative observation or
and
consciousness?
Creative consciousness, yeah. And to move, well, the very first thing is to understand that it's true, you know, that it's actually true that consciousness is inherently bifurcated and that there is the presence of the manufactured self and that there is within all of us the essential self.
Right.
And that you have to start with that. You can't fight that. Okay, so that already is a choice. You make that choice. And when you make that choice, there is a rather instantaneous result that comes from that choice.
As long as
it's a real choice, you know, you do acknowledge the existence of the essential self at that level.
Mm-hmm.
Then you decide to walk upon the path,
mm-hmm.
you know, and there are lots of ways to do that. And some of them are not very good and some of them are really good. So assuming that you've found a good path, but taking Vipassana course, I would recommend to anybody who's at all serious about this. There's a practice we have called the constancy of choice.
Oh, good.
You know, this is part of the acceptance of the incarnation, is that you have to constantly choose to practice this practice. It's not, again, there's no cosmic wand, you know.
You won't crave it?
That is a really great question, is that the difference between craving and the practice, you know, and there is a place in meditation where meditating actually brings you to the thing that is the problem that you are working on in the meditation, and it goes like this. In meditation, you have a beautiful sit, we call sitting, right? So you have a beautiful sit, and there's a free flow of the essential self and the universal life force is flowing through your body, and you're just like, and you come out of that and you go, oh man, this was it, you know? And then the next sit you do, the next day or the next hour, you do that, and it doesn't happen. And you go, oh, I'm so miserable. I'm full of misery. Oh, I must be doing something wrong. I'm a bad person. or this is all wrong, I hate this, I don't like this. You know, this is the trap of meditation. So what we say is that everything is always changing. Mm-hmm. And
constancy of change.
And it's the constancy of choice, because you constantly have to choose to be in that present moment. Mm-hmm. And if you don't do that, you won't be. It's really simple at that level. And you have to constantly choose to be in the presence of the essential self. You know, when you get a chiropractic adjustment and you have a neck problem and you get a chiropractic adjustment and you feel great, you know, and then 2 weeks later, you're back in the place that you were.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so you got to go back and you got to get a chiropractic adjustment again. It's basically the same thing. You know, I have to constantly choose to observe the reality as it is. Because just like my neck and my chiropractic thing, I choose to observe the reality as it is. I unite with the beauty of the present moment. I unite with the presence of the essential self, and I am a creator.
All right, this brings me...
And then 5 minutes later, all that's gone. All that's gone. And so I have to choose again to do that. It is a constant, constant choice.
Now, I want to say this. This is not changing the subject. You've done some amazing music, and one of the pieces is called Integration.
Mm.
And is that not having a vibrational milieu, a vibrational ambiance, is this not absolutely helpful in facilitating
this?
Yes. Maybe we could end with some of that.
Yes. So I would like to thank you for giving me this opportunity to share these really deep concepts.
Oh, I appreciate it a lot, actually. Thank you, David.
And I am just really honored to be able to do that. And so let's do this really cool thing where we can close by giving our audience a 1 minute or so integration meditation sound experience with some of Eisen's music.
I would really love that. And I want you all to feel it. I said in my little flyer how I feel it run right through my whole body, and that can't but help us facilitate getting out of our manufactured brain, if that's what we're looking for, right?
Yes, this music will allow you to enter into the deep space of integration. Mm-hmm. And so I would encourage all of you to sit back and relax and just receive this. Remember, observe, recognize, validate, and receive.
Thank you for your great work.
Thank you. And now, come back. And come back slowly and allow yourself to hold the form of the beauty of this integrated experience and hopefully continue to embrace the presence of the integrated essential self. And if you're interested in getting some more of this music and having some of it in your own home, you could please go to therasound.com, therasound.com, and also our special gift to our returning veterans. You may please visit veteransrelief.com for some wonderful integrative and relaxation music for those soldiers who we want to say thank you. And again, try to hold on to this experience as you walk through the rest of your day. And thank you, Veronica.
Thank you so much for joining us and being such a great paradigm shifter. And for anyone who wants to give any feedback, well, you've got some contact there, but David Eisen is on Facebook. You can find him there, connect with him, and also send me a message, veronicaentwistle.com. There's an Ask Veronica button, and you can chat about anything you want. Give us feedback on David Eisen and the effect of his music and his conversation about the mind and your evolution. Any feedback you want, I would enjoy very much. Or if you need a session with me or just want to say hello, veronicaentwistle.com. And I thank you so much for listening to Paradigm Shifters. And check on iTunes and Stitcher as well as my site for this to be podcasted. Good night, everyone.